Sister Rosetta Tharpe was a blues, gospel, and rock and roll pioneer. She meshed secular musical styles with a gospel message like nobody before her. And she unleashed an electric guitar sound that predates the rock and roll revolution by more than a decade. Born in Cotton Plant, Arkansas, she became a star around the world. Friday night, a documentary about her will premiere on PBS at 9. The director of the American Masters episode titled Sister Rosetta Tharpe, the Godmother of Rock and Roll, is Mick Charkey. Last week, I talked to him from his apartment in London.
I first became aware of Sister Rosetta Tharpe through a radio program. I think it was the BBC World Service. I was sitting in bed late at night. I heard an interview taking place between a BBC interviewer and someone called Gail Wald, who'd just written a book called Shout, Sister Shout, The Untold Story of the Rock and Roll Trailblazer, Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Now, I wasn't really listening very attentively at the start, but suddenly I sat up with such a shock. I heard a clip of Sister Rosetta singing Up Above My Head.
Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, there is music in the air. Up above my head, music in the air. And I really do believe, really do believe, joy somewhere.
And it was quite late at night, actually, and I jumped out of bed, I went to my computer, and I looked her up. And, you know, I'd never heard of her before. I know many, many people had, but I hadn't. And I spent the night literally finding out everything I could about her and became absolutely entranced by the video clips, the film clips that I found, the photographs, and what some of the people said about her. I think it was when Bob Dylan said she was one of the most important influences in the 20th century on popular music that I really jumped, and I felt as a documentary filmmaker who kind of has to look for what resonates with the public, what resonates with me initially, I thought this was a heck of a story. So I found myself writing it up before I went back to bed. I wrote it up, and in the morning I sent it to the BBC and said, please give me some money to get started on a wonderful film. And within a month, I was in Baltimore interviewing one of her oldest friends.
You know, I think for those of us who discovered her after her death, so many have a similar sort of story that you first hear about her or first hear her, and then I wouldn't say become obsessed, but it's close. You can't believe this figure existed and you didn't know about her.
Well, I'd so agree. I mean, I've made a few films about African American music. I've enjoyed a long sort of period of African American historical influences, right through jazz, blues, soul. Making portraits of people like Bob Marley and more. And there was something that seemed, nevertheless, incredibly fresh about her and yet somehow familiar. And I think there is a familiarity because she influenced so many people from way back, from the late 30s, early 40s onwards, that so much of her music sort of exists through other people's music but as a result of the way they interpreted her.
Well, what's amazing about her is her ability to mix secular sounds with gospel music and that wonderful voice and wonderful guitar. She's quite, unique.
Well, spot on. I think you've hit it. She's a combination of a very warm person singing with a very warm, entertaining voice, but that sort of showbiz swagger of the guitar, that real sort of Eric Clapton, Jimi Hendrix, Pete Townsend, and more sort of swagger of her own style, the way she hits the newly electrified guitar. I think it made her just that bridge between church music and secular music, as you say.
And of course, as people might expect, for some, she was a beloved figure in music for breaking down boundaries. Others rejected, thought that she was mixing things that should not be put together.
Well, she went through a bad patch in the late 30s when she made that jump to the Cotton Club to recording some pretty saucy music. I mean, some of the lyrics of songs that she was employed to sing when she was very young, and I think not very knowing, she was singing songs like 4 or 5 Times a Night, I Will Please My Man sort of lyrics, and All I Want Is a Tall Skinny Popper, which is a rather unambiguous message, I think. Which caused a great deal of grief for people in the world of gospel. But I think when she came to her senses a little, she found she could please both audiences without offending either audience. And really, that was by putting all her energies into gospel music, but giving it that popular showbiz oomph, that magic that she'd learned as someone who was hugely attracted to the popular audience, to the applause, to getting really, you know, enthusiastic feedback in places like the Cotton Club.
You know, you mentioned that Bob Dylan cites her as an influential figure. You look at the earliest people associated with what we call rock and roll, Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard, Elvis Presley, they all sing her praises. There are some music historians that say, you know what, rock and roll is right there at the feet of her song Strange Things Happening Every Day, one of, if not the first record you could call perhaps what becomes rock and roll.
Church people say they are in this holy way. There are strange things happening every day. On that last great judgment day, when they drive them all away, there are strange things happening every day.
What completely flummoxed me in my early researches was her absence from the great Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Why isn't she there? And I guess if I had one overriding ambition for this film, it would be to see her inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It may be a bit late, but my goodness, she should be there. And I think it would be hugely satisfying to feel that through the great sort of value of radio and television, that people get to know more about her and therefore sort of support that idea and root for her as soon as possible.
You know, in the documentary, there is archival, not just audio, but footage of her, and there's a great clip of her playing. I think it's from the mid-60s, singing Didn't It Rain?
That's one of my favorite moments in the film, and it was extraordinary the way it was constructed. Granada Television in Britain discovered that she was coming on a tour to Britain with Muddy Waters, and they concocted the most extraordinary cliche of taking a disused railway station and dressing it up like a sort of Southern States railway station from the US of A, complete with goats and horses and barrels and rocking chairs and goodness knows what. And it happened to be pouring with rain. The day they went to shoot this on television, it was pouring with rain all over the guitars, all over the piano, all over everybody, all over the audience, and yet appropriately she stood up and sang Didn't It Rain, referring to Noah's Ark and it brought the house down. People absolutely adored it, and that really was what brought her to the attention of a big audience in Britain, who took her very much to their hearts.
Well, you know, when you hear the description of the video, and she's wearing this sort of, you know, not matronly, but a heavy coat, and she's walking with this electric guitar, it sounds like it should be completely cheesy. Instead, it's completely mesmerizing.
Didn't it rain, children? You know it did, didn't it? Oh, yes, how it rained. I said it rained, children. Rain, oh, yes, didn't it? Yes, didn't it? You know it did, didn't it? Oh, my Lord, how it rained.
I guess the way to sum her up, because after I read the biography, Shout, Sister, Shout, someone asked me, who had never heard of her, I said, she just seems to be, of all the people I've ever read about, have this innate sense of that rough patch, notwithstanding you mentioned the 30s, of knowing show business, where it should end, and where genuine artistry should begin, and just had this presence, both visually and on record.
Exactly. I mean, I'm wary of too much sort of homegrown psychoanalysis or whatever. But, you know, she was a little girl, keen to please. She was addicted to praise and recognition right from an early age. She lost her father. She lost her father because her mother took her away, took her on the road somewhat to exploit her talent, as many, many people did exploit her talent. Her mother took her north to Chicago, where by the age of 6, she was singing in church, standing on the piano, playing the guitar, and holding crowds spellbound. And I think that is a bit of an addiction. and she couldn't stop. She couldn't stop, and it gave her the sort of strength to play right on through pretty severe illness. I mean, in older age, once she was diagnosed with diabetes, I mean, she had one of her legs removed, but she was still on stage, sometimes in a wheelchair, sometimes propped up on a stool, playing for audiences, all of which I'm told, and sadly I never saw one, but all of which I'm told were incredibly emotional events in everybody's lives, her life no less, but the audiences for sure.
And finally, for a documentary filmmaker, was there anything you really wanted to find that eluded you?
That eluded me?
Yeah.
Well, I think meeting her. I mean, I without doubt, I fell in love with her right from early on, and it became more and more of an addiction. I found her such a wonderful person. I would love to have met her. I would love to have found more footage of her. I guess what did elude me was, to be serious, what really did elude me was there wasn't a lot of film of her. There were the early sort of jukebox shoots of her singing those songs like Tall Skinny Papa and Lonesome Road, which you'll see in the film when she was in her early 20s. But we couldn't find nowhere, any footage of her in the late 30s, early 40s, when she was at her absolute prime. And although we've got some great photographs, and I think we evoke it well with the use of the wonderful music and a lot of lovely photographs, but it would have been just great to have found film of her performing in those days. What we had recourse to do in the end was to use footage of her in the 50s, 60s, 70s to evoke that period, I guess, when she really broke in the early 40s. But I'd love to have found more of that, and maybe if there's anybody out there with film, I think it's a treasure for the nation to be sort of preserved, if it could be found. But I kind of have a feeling that we looked as hard as we could and we couldn't find it.
Mick Charkey is the Emmy Award-winning director of the new documentary, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, the Godmother of Rock and Roll. The American Masters episode airs Friday night at 9 on AETN in Arkansas and most PBS stations. Mick spoke with me from his apartment in London last week.
Nothing funny in the news? Think again. But still, Winter Storm Plato. Kid you not, a platonic weather event. What is that? You name puppies, you don't name this kind of stuff. Anyhow, the Weather Channel is forbidden to use Winter Storm Feldman. Join me this week for all the news that isn't and more on the What Do You Know Radio Hour from PRI, Public Radio International.
The What Do You Know Hour with Michael Feldman, Saturday morning at 10 on KUAF 91.3 FM.